So
does this work?
That's all right. So I'm not going to go up there and speak ex cathedra. I don't have slides. In fact, my motto, some of you know, is that power corrupts and PowerPoint corrupts absolutely. So I'd much rather just talk, and I'd like to have a conversation, if that's possible. Of course, in order for that to happen, you have to shut me up in order to interrupt, and I've just stolen your microphone, which also has some impact. So if in fact we do get to have a conversation, wave your hand so that I can figure out where you are, and I'll run down with a microphone. It's my Geraldo bit. I feel like I don't want to be the deaf dinosaur, but I'm pretty close to that. I've been around in this game for a really long time, and so it isn't necessarily obvious that anything I have to say is relevant to the kind of problems that you're facing. I'm reminded of the story of the talking dog. This guy finds a dog that can talk, and he takes it around to all these various events, and everybody's all excited. They don't care what the dog says. It's just the fact that the dog can talk is amazing. And sometimes I show up at these things like the talking dinosaur. Everybody's amazed that I can still talk, but that's about all. Let me start out by raising a couple of questions that come to mind with regard to Jeannie. Please bear in mind that I kind of parachute in from time to time to see what Jeannie is doing. I'm not with it all the time. I'm not up to date necessarily. One of the reasons I agreed to come here is because I wanted to find out more about what was going on and how things are faring. But here's an example of one of the things that immediately comes to mind. Is that to what extent will the underlying infrastructure of Jeannie influence the range of experiments and designs that can actually be tested? Now, I don't think that we're completely isolated from the underlying infrastructure, and so whatever you build may have an influence on the kinds of things that people can try out. I think it's considering your Spiral 2 comments, Chip, one of the most important things that you can do as a group is to engage with the researchers who are interested in new technologies and new designs and architectures for things like internet. And the more outside the envelope of the current internet that you get, the more important it is to find ways to help support experimental work. So let me give you a couple of examples. Broadcast is an area where internet has done very poorly. Multicast is not a very good substitute for broadcast, and we don't make very good use of broadcast media in the Internet Protocol Suite. There aren't facilities in those protocols that make the assumption that multiple parties will hear a transmission or take advantage of that. In fact, if anything, we have tended to take broadcast media and turn them into point-to-point transport mechanisms. And so here's an area where there is, I think, a very rich opportunity for exploring new kinds of network architectures if they happen to be operating in a broadcast environment. That could be dealt with in part, perhaps, by the WiMAX facility, or in part by satellites, which aren't yet part of the architecture. But imagine for a moment that you have a synchronous satellite, or maybe even the O3B, if you've been following the other 3 billion company, which wants to put up a dozen satellites in orbit at 8,000 kilometers, so they're not synchronous. Because they're at lower altitude, they have lower delay, and the bandwidths that they're proposing to put on their spot beams are in the 10 gigabit per second range. They're touching 40 degrees north and south. That's the plan, which means that they will be bringing substantial potential capacity to sub-Saharan Africa, to the Pacific Islands, to the mid-portions of Latin America, and so on. These are places that are isolated in many respects from the modern broadband internet. But the reason I bring it up is you can imagine having streams of packets being blasted down from satellites, received by tens to hundreds to thousands to millions of receivers simultaneously. The question is, what sorts of protocols should we be experimenting with to take advantage of the fact that many, many parties can receive the same transmission? Some may not get it. How do we recover from that? We don't have those protocols in use typically in the internet today because the infrastructure didn't support it. and the protocol suite didn't either. So this is an experimental area which I would really like to see supported. Another example is context-based routing. Some people have, Deborah Estrin, I think of, as one example of looking at the possibility that instead of routing by address, you route by interest. So you advertise that you're interested in a particular kind of information, and that interest is propagated around the routing table. And so when a piece of information that is related to that interest pops up, it gets routed through that routing table to all the parties advertising an interest in that, as opposed to routing by a specific address. That's an example of something that might be interesting to implement. And one of the questions that I would ask myself, if I were in your shoes, would be, which of these various kinds of ideas are supportable with the system that I'm designing and building? And if the answer is, gee, I can't support that, you might want to step back and say, well, how can I expand the footprint of my experimental apparatus? Another example of something that I think is valuable to incorporate into the design would be very good quality time synchronization so that you can do one-way measurements of delay. The round-trip time measurements are helpful, but they don't necessarily help illuminate some of the major problems that show up in network operations. So having good time synchronization as part of the infrastructure so the timestamps are meaningful, even when they're in only one way, could be quite helpful. Chip mentioned security. We all understand that the current security in the Internet is pretty weak, and there are attempts at building mechanisms to improve that, firewalls and IPsec and DNSSec and various things, but they're kind of patchy, for one thing. And second, if you look at the various security problems that networks have, the Internet in particular has, you find that the problems emerge at various layers in the architecture. So we aren't going to solve the security problem by putting one thing somewhere in the layered architecture and solve all of the issues, because authentication has turned out to be a really tough problem. It came up in the context of the Genie system itself when you talked about identity management within the Genie architecture. Who has the rights to what portions of the Genie experimental infrastructure? But now let's set aside the infrastructure that you're building and ask about the networks that we want to experiment with. They have this problem too. They have this problem in so many different ways. In the current Internet, you get to announce what your Internet address is, which means you can spoof that. There are historical reasons for that. I won't go into why that happened that way, but we should be looking at networks that don't let you do that, networks that insist that you can't fake your identity at that level. You should be able to verify that you got to the right destination host, for example, not simply by looking it up in the domain name system and getting a digitally signed answer, but after you get to that target, you should be able to say things like, okay, you claim to be www.google.com, but prove it. And there has to be a protocol for doing this sort of handshake to verify that you got to the right place. And you could make the same kinds of arguments at higher levels in the architecture. You know, where did this email come from? I'm doing a financial transaction. Do I really know who the party is? Can I validate the identity of the party with whom I am transacting? So many of these things are kind of application layer stuff, in which case that should be largely invisible to the Genie infrastructure. But in the back of my mind, I have been thinking about the permeability of the layering concept. And the consequence of thinking about permeability leads me to ask questions about whether Genie should actually have a role to play at higher and higher levels in what we typically call layered architecture. Let me explain what I mean by permeability. In the Internet world, one of the most powerful choices in the design that was made is that the IP layer would not know or depend very much on the underlying transmission and switching system. It was largely ignorant. All it knew is if I dumped a bunch of bits down the pipe, that they would show up with some probability greater than zero somewhere else. And that's the only thing that the IP layer was expecting of the underlying system. It knows very little about the performance and the characteristics of the underlying transmission system. The consequence of that was helpful because it meant that anything that would move a bunch of bits from one place to another could become part of the internet architecture. And so the internet was able to ingest a wide range of different transmission systems into its architecture without very much difficulty. On the other hand, you pay a price for that, and the price you pay is efficiency and performance. If the IP layer and the routing system knew more about the conditions of the underlying network, it might be able to use the resources available more efficiently. But the layering structure was deliberately designed to suppress that information. So in new network designs and new kinds of architectures, maybe there's some information that should flow between the layers. And that might allow you to do things more effectively or do things you couldn't do before. So again, I would be asking questions like, how much information can I project out of the genie portion of the system into this experimental network design that I'm implementing, and what effect does that have? You mentioned several times the notion of federating the various pieces of the genie system, and I'm a big fan of that. Federation usually requires some standardization because it basically says, if we all do this way, we will interwork successfully. The good thing about that is that it lets people try new things out and still be able to interoperate with others. And that's been a big help in the internet environment. People can build new applications and protocols, and they can reasonably expect them to work on the other end of the network because of the standards. On the other hand, I had a very interesting conversation with Ray Ozzie yesterday up at Microsoft, and we talked about interoperability. And one of the key notions that came out of this conversation is that you pay a price for interoperability. It usually means compromising on fidelity. So let me give you an example of this. If you have a very complex document, whether it's a presentation like a PowerPoint or a Microsoft Word document or a Google Doc or what have you, exchanging these things back and forth doesn't always work perfectly. And the reason is that not all the functionality in the two endpoints are identical. The semantics are not always identical. Maybe even the fonts that are available may not be identical. And so in order to interwork, you have to accept a kind of suppression of fidelity in order to achieve this ability to exchange information successfully. So one of the questions that I would raise about federating of the portions of the genie system is what kinds of compromises are going to be needed in order to allow for federation to take place. Let me give you an example, not so much of a compromise, but of a requirement. If you're going to have multiple pieces of the genie system operating together, and if the researcher needs to control all those things, you're going to have a common agreement about how to set up and allocate the resources to a particular experiment. All of the parts of the system have to have a common understanding of how that control is supposed to work. And even if you had ideas in your own portion of the system about very elaborate forms of control, you may not be able to propagate that to everyone. So you have to settle on some compromise that everyone will agree to support. This leads me to an interesting piece of speculation. It may turn out that the Genie project will have value beyond simply being an infrastructure on top of which experimental networking is done. It could turn out that the underlying protocols of the Genie system itself will turn out to be an important intellectual contribution. And so I hope that attention is paid to that. Clearly you need documentation or people can't implement it. But I think that we should be attentive to the fact that the genie structure itself as an artifact may turn out to be an important contribution to the networking world, quite independent of any experiments that take place on the top of it. Let me take another step in the direction of things that we didn't necessarily do well in the internet, or that we didn't really address. And I'm using that word deliberately. What is an address? What thing should be addressable? You know, in the internet world, addresses tend to be interfaces on boxes. And the model that that drove that was pretty simple-minded. There's this box. It's called a computer. It has an operating system. There are processes running inside the operating systems. Processes want to talk to each other. And so the entire structure was designed to let processes talk to each other. And we drew pictures showing multiple processes inside of a time-shared operating system talking out through a port through this network, and then somehow passing the data to the other end and the receiving box figuring out which process it's supposed to deliver the packet to. Pretty simple stuff. But what would happen if addresses weren't confined to the physical interfaces of a box somewhere? What if an address could include a process that could move around in the network and still be identifiable as that unique process, even regardless of what machine it's running in? Or what if it was a digital object that was addressable? What if it was a piece of memory that was addressable? I'm looking at Dave Farber, because the ring system that he was working on back in the 60s at UC Irvine had very interesting properties about being able to address other people's memory remotely. So the point I want to make here is that exploring ideas about different kinds of addressability, or different things or concepts or objects that could be addressed, ought to be a part of the Genie capability. And if it isn't, you know, if the range of experiments that can be supported in Genie does not allow this kind of thinking, then, you know, I would have to raise a pink flag anyway and say, hey, let's go look more carefully at the capabilities of the Genie infrastructure, because I'd like to see some pretty elaborate and advanced ideas explored by the networking research community. Here's another example. Some of you will have heard of something called the delay and disruption tolerant networking protocols, and I talk about them a lot because it's related to the interplanetary extension of the internet. The reason I bring it up, however, is another test case. One of the things that makes DTN different from the internet is that it contemplates storing information in the network. If you can't deliver what we call a bundle, which is the moral equivalent of a packet. If you can't deliver a bundle on the next hop because the next hop isn't there right now, you don't throw it away and send an error message back. You hang on to it. And then when that next hop is available, or until the bundle times out because it's too old, you forward it. Well, the reason for having chosen to do that in the interplanetary design should be pretty obvious. If you've gone to the trouble of getting a chunk of information 9 billion miles away and it's only got another 100 million to go, it's a pain in the neck and very expensive to say, well, we threw it away and you're going to have to retransmit it end to end. He said, no, we're not going to do that. Partly because we know that the connectivity in this environment is driven by celestial motion. We know that connectivity will come eventually. And so let's hang on to this until we have an opportunity to contact the other site. Well, one question is, will the Genie system support experiments with that kind of design? And if the answer is no, then I have to raise, again, the question about the scope of the experiments that Genie will support. If the answer is yes, then good, because I'd like to see more exploration and experimentation with some of these kinds of ideas. This gets even more elaborate. The DTN work was sponsored by DARPA. The original work was for the Interplanetary Internet's architecture, but later we went back to DARPA and we said, you know, we think that there are terrestrial environments where discontinuities and unknown and arbitrary delays are common. And that happens to be in tactical military communication, where you're hiding in radio shadow to keep being shot at, or somebody's jamming the radio signal and you can't communicate. And so we said, maybe this DTN idea would be useful for tactical communication. And they said, well, prove it. And they handed some money to MITRE Corporation. And we went out and demonstrated in parallel DTN and TCP/IP. We got 15 times more data through the DTN system than we did through TCP. And the reason was not magic. It's just that we were able to hold on to the data and then deliver it when a channel became available, as opposed to throwing it away and having to retransmit end-to-end. So I bring this up in part to emphasize that these ideas are going to be useful terrestrially. This is not just a question of these peculiar interplanetary stuff. And so the mobile world, which, as you know, is rapidly, well, it must 4 billion mobiles are in operation around the world now and counting, may turn out to be a playground, so to speak, for some of these new networking ideas. And it would be really nice if the Gini system allowed exploration of those notions. So, again, I would encourage validation that that your system is capable of supporting this kind of network operation. There's another thing that I wanted to emphasize for you, and it has to do with being willing to let go of your intuition. This, we found, was quite hard to do. We started working on the network management aspect of delay and disruption-tolerant networks. And the first thing we had to let go of was ping. And ping is really hard to let go of because, you know, it's such a convenient thing. You know, are you there? And the problem is that in the DTN environment, you have absolutely no idea when a response might come back, especially if there's a multi-hop system and there's, you know, celestial motion is interfering with things, or maybe you've got a radio-based system and it's got batteries that are low and it's not talking to anybody right now until the sun comes back up and it can recharge its batteries. You're not going to hear an answer to ping. To make matters worse, even if you did get an answer to ping, there's no guarantee that because you got an answer, you can turn around and transmit back, because by the time your signal gets there 20 minutes later, the thing has gone behind the planet, you know, and you can't talk to it, or the planet's rotated and it's on the wrong side. So all of the intuitions about real-timeness in network management go out the window. And I have to tell you that as we work for a couple of days on what would the network management architecture look like in this kind of environment, we had to keep reminding ourselves over and over and over, it doesn't work the way the internet does. Things are not real time. You can't guarantee any of that. So it gets back now to an interesting dual question. The first one has to do with Gini itself. How do I manage it? How do I know about its resources, and how do I allocate them and return them back to the pool? If any of you have ever had problems with storage management where you have a memory leak, think about having a resource leak in Gini where, you know, somebody runs an experiment and then that particular resource doesn't get returned to the pool properly and eventually there are no resources left. You know, this is going to happen. You know, it's something that you have to pay attention to. So there is the Gini itself, and how do you manage that? And again, I want to emphasize that what you learn from trying to design and build and operate Gini will in itself be important intellectual information in addition to whatever experiments take place. But now when we get to new networking architectures, especially the ones where delay is uncertain and communication is uncertain, we should be able to simulate that in your network or in your Gini environment. And I think it's important, again, because of the mobile communications, that terrestrial communications, which have some of these problems, we need to be able to experiment with network designs that cope with those problems, not just for the interplanetary case. Another thing we learned as a result of looking at a highly delayed and variable delayed communication is that autonomy has become really important. Since you can't interactively do sets with SNMP to change the configuration of a box that's 900 million miles away, you have to send a big thing which does all of the configuration for you when it gets there. And so this notion of autonomy, where you send information off and it gets aggregated and executed as one gigantic transaction, may turn out to be something which also has to be considered, not necessarily for Gini itself, but for the networks that sit on top of it and are part of the experimental base. Something else that I wanted to emphasize about the Gini infrastructure, and that's instrumentation. One of the lessons that we learned, certainly from the ARPANET program, was the value of instrumenting the switches, being able to capture information about what was happening to packets that are flowing through. Well, it's very possible that the devices that you use, let me say this more carefully, it's possible that the network that is being, I want to use the word simulated or emulated or exercised on top of the Genie platform, doesn't have all of the instrumentation or maybe isn't even capable of doing all the instrumentation that you would like to have. And so the Genie platform itself, I think, can contribute a great deal to our understanding of network design and behavior by instrumenting things, by capturing data that you might not be able to get conveniently from the high, you know, the higher level network that you're emulating. So I think you need to pay an enormous amount of attention to what kinds of information you can capture and observe in the emulated system. This, by the way, could turn out to be really important from the security point of view. Let's suppose that it's possible to very heavily instrument the Genie layer in this system, and now we're running some network which we believe is more resistant to various forms of denial of service attack or other kinds of attack. We'd like to observe how well this proposed new network is actually going to resist the attacks that take place. We can use the instrumentation capability of Genie to find out what actually happens, to be tagging the packets which showed up, which capturing traces and doing all kinds of other things that we don't want to do in the emulated network itself because that's going to interfere with its functionality, but we can hide that because we're doing it underneath inside the Genie layer. So learning about the behavior of the network, capturing useful information about that, maybe exposing either frailties or strengths in these new designs in the face of attack is really important. And I have to say that if we're going to be serious about doing improving on the architecture of the internet or replacing it, that one of the areas that we absolutely have to pay attention to is much stronger security in the broadest sense of the word, whether it's strong authentication or cryptographic protection of the information or resistance to various forms of viral and Trojan horse attacks. All of those have to be seriously dealt with, attacked, in order to build a network that we can trust. And finally, in this little peroration anyhow, one of the things that we learned about the ARPANET in Len Kleinrock's laboratory at UCLA is that it's really nice to have validation of models of the behavior and performance of a network. And the only way you can do that is to design, queuing theoretic models, run them and make predictions, and then measure to find out whether your predictions and your models are anywhere close to measured reality. The Genie system has the potential to help us understand more deeply the statistical behavior of some of these networks. So one of the tests that that I would propose is that you do some experiments in Genie that capture enough statistical information. Mario, this would be something you should be working on. Capture statistical information that would let us validate our models of these networks. If we can't model the networks, it's going to be very hard to figure out how to design them effectively. One of the nice things about the telephone world is that a telephone call is still 3 minutes on the average with, you know, some nice bell-shaped curve, except for teenagers. And that's and now they don't make phone calls anymore anyhow. They're too busy tweeting and texting. So the internet doesn't have any kind of statistical model like that, and the reason is that every time you think you understand what the statistical behavior of the internet is, somebody comes up with another application which shifts the statistics and makes it look different. So we don't have very good data about the current internet. We should be looking for better and better ways to characterize new network designs, because in the absence of that, it becomes very hard to figure out how to scale a particular network architecture to cover the applications that are required. So let me see whether I've got okay. Yes, I just want one other point I want to make. I don't know to what extent, Chip, maybe you can say at the beginning of this conversation, how much interaction there has been between the NSF-funded Future Internet Design community and the Genie community. But I was listening to your plea for people to try to encourage folks to use their experimental infrastructure. And I honestly had the feeling when you said that, that somehow we'd gotten the cart and the horse inverted. What should be happening is that the fine guys should be coming and saying, I need to try this idea out. Can you do it? Now, if that's not happening, it's either because they don't have any ideas, I hope that's not true, or they don't know about the availability. Now, so part of your point is well taken. People who are interested in new network design should know more about what's available. But I would really like you to be driven hard by the people who are trying to invent, design, and test new networking ideas. And, you know, if there aren't any new networking ideas, I would like to use public shaming as a tool for forcing a bit more creativity. So I actually, that's as much as I wanted to just, you know, yak at you about. I know you gave me a huge amount of time. I'd much rather have a conversation at this point about some of the points I've raised. Maybe I didn't raise some that you thought I should have. Maybe there are problems that you've encountered in the course of your work that deserve some attention. Maybe there are things that Chip should be doing that he isn't doing that you didn't tell him about, which we could tell him about right here in the middle of this conversation. But I want to hear from you because I'm here partly to understand what's happening with this experimental infrastructure. So I know you could tell me go and into the room and look at the various displays, and I did do that last night for a few of them in the time that I had. But it's your turn. I want you to tell me, you know, what have you got? And will it support some of these various networking ideas or not? And if not, is it an issue? So now I'm going to use the well-known method of simply shutting up and waiting to see what happens. All right. I'm sorry?
The well-known method is to call.
Well, I could do that, too. You want to get called on? No. All right. Okay. Yes.
So, you talked about security, and this has been a Genie problem in a sense of you've been trying, Chip has been talking about trying to get people to submit security things and so on. There seems to be a real disconnect between when we as a networking community talk about security and when the world at large, New York Times type of level, talks about security. Namely, many of these things who talk about a lot are phishing and credit card numbers and social security numbers and have inheritances to distribute and things of that nature, which we seem to be able to do very little about. And so the question is there at the levels that we talk about at the Genie level, which tends to be layer 4 and below, what useful things we can do without really kind of just hitching on to the security wagon and omitting the asterisk that we're really not going to get rid of the Nigerian princess that way?
Thank you, Henning. Actually, let me start out by challenging something that you said at the very end. Just purely for purposes of, what is it that my lawyer friends say, arguendo, that is for the purposes of having an argument. It's not clear to me that Genie should be thought of as a layer 1 or a layer 2 infrastructure. In fact, as soon as you said that, I was thinking, wait a minute, you know, if suppose that I actually put on top of Genie a fully functioning network system, including, you know, application layers and everything else. But bearing in mind that the system that I'm running, this network, this putative new network design, is running on top of Genie, there's nothing that would stop me from wanting to capture log information and other things from multiple layers. In fact, it would be very interesting if I could deliberately just like you do logging inside of an operating system, it would be very interesting if the Genie infrastructure allowed me to log stuff from various layers in the system. So now to come back to the specific issue of security and how it manifests in public, an awful lot of security problems are the result of stupidity. You know, badly chosen passwords, you know, dictionary attacks, people leaving their laptops and having them stolen, people losing memory sticks. We're not going to solve some of those things. On the other hand, a lot of security practices, which would be very strong, don't get used because they're too inconvenient. And, you know, trying to remember 60 or 70 or 100 different passwords is hard, especially if you're not allowed to write them down anywhere. I recently did write them down, I won't tell you where, and in order to find out how many there were. And I counted 150 different passwords that I need to use for various applications and services on the net and internal things at Google and everything else. And I was actually quite surprised to discover there were that many. Second, I now felt a little better that I was having trouble remembering them all. And I tried very hard not to make them all the same, which is what a lot of example of a natural but very bad practice. So what can we do about this? Well, first of all, one of the biggest problems in the current internet design is not necessarily the direct frontal attack at the IP layer. It's the problem of ingesting viruses in the browser. And if you think about what's happened to the World Wide Web, in the earliest World Wide Web HTML world, you had very static pages. And so your browser simply downloaded a file and interpreted the file for presentation purposes, and that was it. But it's now 2009. We don't have just HTML. We have XML. We have Java. We have JavaScript. We have Python. We have all of these high-level languages, which often get downloaded into the browser and then executed. And a lot of the browsers are very naive about what they do with that executable code or interpretable code. And to make matters worse, they're operating